Thursday just gone, it was Lyndall's birthday. If I told you how old she is, I would get in trouble. So we're not going to do that. Plus, I'd need to work it out. The night before, I took an apple and I cut the apple in two. And I got one half of the apple and I wrapped it up in some Glad wrap. And then I wrapped it up in some wrapping paper and I presented it to her on her birthday. I'm a romantic, I know. And I said to her, she looked at this and fiddled with it. I said, if you can guess what that is before you open it, I'll double it. Brilliant, I know. She couldn't. She spent a little while having a guess and a think about what it was, and no joy. She couldn't come up with it. And so I said, okay, well, you can open it. If you want to forego half the gift, that's fine. And so she opens it and she looks at it just with enormous joy and wonder. And it accompanied the words, Ralph, you're an idiot. I said, this symbolizes something that I've been giving you clues to the last number of weeks and months. It should be plainly obvious what this means. And you can't get the real gift until you work it out. Now, it's obvious, isn't it? Does anyone want to have a guess?
A tree?
No. But that would have been good. Like from the seed. Just plant it yourself. Love it. Next year, the other half of the apple. Good. Any other guesses? An Apple device? That's what she was really hoping for. Yeah. When I cut her phone in half, not so happy. Yeah. So a clue that I'd given her was a couple of nights before, we were watching TV and an ad for a TV show called Ted Lasso came up. Have we got any Ted Lasso fans? Ted Lasso is an amazing show. It's on Apple TV that you need a subscription to. And the third season has just come out. And you can watch the entirety of the third season with a six-month subscription. Anyway, it took Lyndall a little bit of time to the point where I thought maybe season four would come out before she nailed it, but she got there in the end. So I, just for those of you that are wondering what on earth is happening, for Lyndall's birthday, I gave her a six-month, a half-yearly subscription to Apple Plus, to which she said, why didn't I get the full year? If I'd given you a full apple, it would have been so confusing, wouldn't it? So I tell you this because the statement of Jesus on the cross today is confusing. It's strange. It's almost a little bit weird until we realize it's a part of a puzzle. It's a puzzle with a whole bunch of clues that if we understand the clues, we can understand what Jesus was actually driving at when he said the words that he said. So from John 19, near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, and her name was Mary. Well done, we're off to a flying start. His mother's sister, and her name was? Let's think about that for a sec. So the parents have a child and they call it Mary, and then they have another child and they go, there's not many names around, let's go with Mary. No, there's a comma, folks, there's a comma. So we have Mary, we have Mary's sister, who we don't know her name. Then we have Mary, who is Clopas' wife. And then, just to make things thoroughly confusing, there's another Mary, which is Mary Magdalene. So there's four women at the cross. Three of them were Marys. So you'd be forgiven if you're a little bit confused, like the history of the church has been since. When Jesus saw his mother there, her name was? Yeah, come on, you've only got one name to guess from. And the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, this is code for John talking about himself. We'll get to that a little bit later on. So there's John, who talks about himself in the third person, in the story that he's writing called the Gospel of John. And so John is standing nearby, and he says to her, so Jesus says to his mum, woman, here is your son. That's to John. And then he says, hey, John, here's your mother. And we go, what? That's as confusing as half an apple on your birthday. From that time on, the disciple, John, took her into his home. Now, John's telling the story. It's in the Gospel of John. And so John is wanting to make sure that there is it's validated. It's not like Jesus said to John, "Let's just get away from the crowd. I've got something secret I want to tell you. When I die, can you look after my mum?" And John's like, "Yeah, no one's going to believe me." It's not like that. John in his writing says there are four or three credible witnesses, all who were best friends with Mary, who were there, who heard this. Now, when this writing would come out, if that wasn't the case, the circulation of these writings would never happen. So we can rest assured that it was a real thing that took place this day, that Jesus said these words. Now, why did Jesus say these words? John has this entertaining way of positioning himself this much more above all the other disciples. It's really clever. Six times in his gospel, he will say, you know, "I was Jesus's best mate. I was the most loved disciple. They called me beloved disciple," all the way through. Now, the brilliance of John is he wrote this after Jesus had died on the cross, was resurrected, and then ascended to heaven. So Jesus couldn't even turn up and refute it. John's like, "Well, look, we were best mates. It's even in my gospel." So, his best mates. Now, we don't know what Jesus actually thought about John, whether Jesus went, "Yes, he's the one I was closest to." But we do know that Jesus trusts John immensely with the care of his mother. Jesus knew that John was of good character, of generous love, and of deep faith. Now, John was the same age as Jesus, and John was also the youngest, understood to be the youngest of all the disciples. So Jesus called disciples to him of all these men that were much older than he was. John was the only one of the 12 disciples who was not martyred for his faith. That means killed for his faith. They tried. They arrested John and they threw him in a vat of boiling oil and it had no effect on him. So they gave up and they sent him to this island called Patmos. And on this island called Patmos, he wrote the book of Revelation. So that's a little bit about John. So some more background. John has a brother. His brother is named James. And James is also a disciple. So John and James are disciples. And they have a father, and the father's name is Zebedee. Now down the pub, people don't call him Zebedee, they call him Thunder. So James and John are the sons of Thunder. Now, if you've been reading the Gospels lately, this will ring some bells. Because there's this really awkward conversation where the sons of Thunder are having a conversation about who should sit on the right hand of Jesus and who should sit on the left hand of Jesus. And Jesus catches wind of it. And let's just say John was not occupying best friend status at that particular moment in time as Jesus dresses them down. So Jesus, on the cross, gives John a mother. The problem is, Zebedee, Thunder's wife, Salome, is still around. She's still in the picture. John already has a wife, and her name, Salome, is not to be confused with salami that we pick up from our local deli. Salome. Now, that makes things unusual. That John already has a mother. He doesn't need two mothers. Meaning that Jesus didn't give John a mum so that he would have a mother. He was already taken care of. So what about Mary? What about Mary, Jesus' mum? Well, the last time we hear about Joseph, and Joseph was Mary's husband, was when Jesus was 12 and he went missing. Remember this? He went missing and he went to the temple, and Mary and Joseph, we think like in terms of our family unit of two and one, but they would have traveled in tribes. And so they're moving back away and they're like, "Where's Jesus? We've lost the Son of God. Did you see him?" "No, I didn't see him. Ah, oh, I hate it when he does this." And they're moving around and they get back to the temple and they find Jesus there at 12 years old, listening to the rabbis and learning from the scribes and the teachers of the law. That's the last time we ever hear of Joseph. Last time. So scholars are quite convinced that between that happening and when Jesus gives Mary to John to look after her, Joseph has passed away. he's died. So Jesus was Mary's eldest son. No surprises there because of the virgin birth and everything. But in Jesus' absence, it should have, care of the mother, care of Mary, should have gone to the second-born son, if that son were actually in existence. And Jesus had lots of siblings. The firstborn was Jesus. The second-born, does anyone know what his name was? James. James. Third-born, let's see how we go. You're like, there was three? There was more. So third-born was Joseph. Next was Simon. Next was Jude. And then there were a number of other daughters that Mary had that we don't know the names of, but in both Mark and Matthew, they're alluded to. So culturally speaking, Mary's care upon Jesus' death with the absence of the husband, Joseph, should have fallen to James. He was now the provider of the family. So let's have a look into James. James had a nickname. His nickname was The Just. Like nowadays, if it were a kind of a fantasy movie, we'd call him like the Sword of Justice. He was The Just. He was actually the leader of the church in Jerusalem. So the centralized church, as the church understood it, James was the leader of that. So why didn't Jesus leave his mum to James, or just let things take their course? Because clearly James is more than capable. Perhaps, I was thinking, perhaps Jesus had this superpower of knowing how long they were going to live. Wouldn't be out of the question for God. He didn't want to tell them this, but when he looked and he went, if I leave you with James, James is soon going to get martyred and then mum will have no one. So I'll go with John because I know John's going to live a long time. Well, it's thought that James died in 62 AD. Josephus, the Jewish historian, wrote that James was stoned to death by the high priest Annas II for preaching something that wasn't allowed, wasn't liked. I was thinking, imagine if ministry still happened that way. So we could flip it, like, so I'm preaching and somebody goes, oh, I'm not sure about that, Ralph. And I say, John, grab the stones. Let's go. That's how John met his demise. He challenged the leading authorities and what they were preaching. And what's fascinating about this, not the stoning and minister and that whole thing, but the date of James's death is well after Mary's death. James lived longer than Mary. John lived longer than Mary. So Jesus didn't choose John because James wouldn't be here. James lived longer than Mary did. Mary died at the age of 40. No, Mary died in 48 AD. That was 14 years before James died, which is just 15 years after Jesus speaks these words from the cross. So from these words on the cross and the passing of Mary to the care of John, 15 years later, she passes away. Now, the mortality rate, how old do you think was the average age of life expectancy considered back then? What do you think? 50, 30. I think I heard it, 35, right? That's not very old. Mary lived till she was 61. So she lived a long and full life. But James, her second eldest, lived longer than she did. So, with all this stuff, why does Jesus say to his mum, go to John's care and not to James's care? Have a chat with the person next to you. What's your hunch? What is it? What's the missing piece? Have a chat. Well, hopefully you got it right, because I'm going to close in prayer. Okay, here's my best conclusion. Having done a ton of research on it, here's my best offering. Neither Mary or John personally needed each other. Mary had a great son. John had a great mother. But James, Jesus' brother, although he would become the leader of the church, wasn't a believer at the time when Jesus hung on the cross. Anyone pick up on that? I kind of led you elsewhere. If you didn't, that was my bad. But if you know the story, John wasn't a believer when Jesus hung on the cross. It was what Jesus did on the cross and then the move of the Holy Spirit that filled James, the brother of Jesus, to be filled with the Holy Spirit. But at the time when Jesus says to John and Mary and puts them together, that's because James wasn't yet a believer or a follower. So what Jesus was doing was he was forming a bond between them that went beyond the biological bonds. It was a prelude to the church. Jesus speaks forth from the cross the existence of the church. For Mary, it would have been a blessing. For John, he could have considered it a burden, but he didn't because Jesus commanded. Words of Jesus, some of his very last, what an honor he took hold of it with just such enthusiasm and respect. And that day, Mary went to live with him. And in the same way, his mum Mary would have just been overcome with Jesus' desire, not just to care for her physical well-being, but to care for her spiritual well-being. It was a prelude to the church that they were then formed together to look after one another. The care Jesus commands is well outside of what the cultural expectations were. It wasn't the expected thing. It wasn't the done thing. Nobody did what Jesus did when he made this instruction. It would have seemed very strange to anybody who knew that Mary's actually taken care of and John's actually taken care of. What are you doing, Jesus? What you're doing surpasses our understanding of the current physical things that are taking place. But that's the church, isn't it? That's what we're called to. We should defy the cultural norms. It should look different in our midst than it looks anywhere else in all of society. The church behaves differently to the cultural expectations. We understand relationships differently. We talk about relationships differently than they do anywhere else in the world. The church brings together unsuspecting people to care for one another like they are family. That's what happened to us in July last year. God brought us together to care for one another as unsuspecting people who were brought into a place to treat each other like family. It was like Jesus said, Burley Head Uniting Church, here is your son, and to Burley Village Church, here is your mother. Like, I give you this relationship, I give it to you. The heart behind Jesus on the cross is that by his word, he is creating new community that the world does not yet understand, but that will actually transform the way the world works if those who are part of it obey Jesus. We have such a precious gift amongst us. In fact, this isn't the normal in churches on the Gold Coast, where we have senior members and young families, we have people who are middle-aged, we have a ton of teenagers. We've got a bunch of naughty kids downstairs driving our children's leaders crazy. It's amazing. We have a functioning, exciting, thriving friendship club. We have a children's ministry. We have a youth ministry that God calls us to say, love each other like family. Treat each other like family. That's rare and it's incredible and it's beautiful. And people are hungry for it. See, when I was 7 or 8, I went to a church that was a quarter the size of this. Now, when I was 7 or 8, you know, Zari's like this tall, but most human beings are this tall. And you look at it and everything's so much bigger. And so we're in this church and I'm like, it's a massive church. And I've been back there and it's a quarter of the size, if that. And it seemed like there were hundreds of people. I think there might've been 40 on a good day. But that church was interesting for us because it was the training ground for me to being naughty. And that happened because I got so bored in the service that you run out of counting the stained glass windows or the slats that were across. I just it was just, couldn't handle it. And so we went out to Sunday school, and then we drove our Sunday school teachers insane. But every Sunday, there was a lady who came. She was an elderly lady. Her name was Louise Horton. And Louise sat toward the back, and every Sunday, when we arrived at church, we had one mission. It was to go and find Nanny Horton. And so we called her Nanny Horton. She treated us like we were her own kids because our grandparents lived several hours away. This was before video call and all of that. So we only got to see them about once a year. But Nanny Horton, we got to see every week. So church would happen and we would go to find Nanny Horton because Nanny Horton had a secret stash of mints. Yeah, not these mints. These are kind of the ones you have to have after the whole world's gone through COVID. But it was back in the good old days where she used to fumble through a purse and she would pull out these, they weren't glistening, thank goodness, but it wouldn't have mattered. These mints that were just like, oh, our salvation. And she would give them to us and they were just the taste of what they meant as we partook in them. In fact, let's see how. Marcus? Yes. Good, Joanie. Good catch. Now you guys have to share them out. You can't eat them all. I know you just thought it was lottery day and you just won. Share one out, and you can do whatever you like with your mint, but it's a way of grabbing hold of what this service is and how it's happening. So take a mint, pass them on. I'm pretty sure our children are keen for any leftovers. That's up to you. I don't care. But Nanny Horton's ministry, it wasn't like a ministry you would say it changed the world. But it changed our world. At 7 or 8, it changed our world. Because when she gave us that mint, it said, I love you and you're valued here and this will help and well done for showing up. She was our favorite. Still is. Nana Horton was the Mary to our John. Now, Jesus has been doing this. He's been repeating this story since the very first day when he hung on the cross and he gave his mother to John and John to his mother. He's been repeating this story over and over and over again, where he puts together seeming strangers and says, love each other like family and look at the beautiful and incredible thing that will come out of it. And it can be hard, can't it? It can be difficult, it can be challenging, it can be hard because you can look at someone that's of a different generation to you and think there is a chasm between us. We have nothing to talk about. I don't know how to connect. What on earth are we going to do? And it happens both ways. But for a start, you have Jesus in common. You have the church in common and you will be amazingly surprised at how much you have in common. But from the cross, Jesus is calling us together, not just to coexist in the same building once a week, but to walk across the room to someone who we think, oh, I probably should know their name and I don't, but I'm going to go and introduce myself and see if we can become friends. And I know it's awkward. I know it's costly. I know you look around and you think, I know half the people here really well. I don't know the other half at all. I know you're already forming reasons in your head why you shouldn't do this. You don't have to tell me. Like, talk to God. God will just do whatever he wants with you. I know you think, hang on, the relationship lines are already set, but they're only set to the degree that we make them set. Jesus on the cross, he casts a vision of the church by asking John to immediately accommodate his mother into his life, and he does. And then he ensures that his mother is looked after, not just physically, but spiritually. Now, I think it's worth saying that Mary, at the point and time when Jesus was hanging on the cross, was the same age as me. Now, I say that because I don't know about you, when I read it, I'm like, oh, she was a frail, elderly lady. I'm not frail. I can happy to chat to anyone about that afterwards if you want. My kids would call me elderly, but I don't feel elderly. Mary wasn't, down and out on her last legs. Oh my gosh, how are we going to provide for Mary? We are part of Jesus' story living on as it repeats itself, and we're invited into the repetition if we dare to follow Jesus. So just take a moment, look around. Just look around at your family. And some of you will only look forward. That's a problem for you, Pete. But turn around, have a look. I know you're a bit awkward, but we're family. It's okay. You can look at each other. Go on. Come on, keep going. You're doing so well at this. Look at you guys go. Come on. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sing a final hymn in a moment to worship God and to conclude the formal part of this service. But on your way to morning tea, or on your way to the door, or on your way to the car, I want you to pause and take just a moment to begin a friendship with someone who you wouldn't call friend. To find someone, you might need to go through the awkwardness of, I should know your name, I'm sorry I don't, my name is. Like, that's cool. Like, now I've said it, everyone can get away with it, right? But we are taking up the echoes of what Jesus said on the cross, of who Jesus called us to. Because ultimately we're training for the people that God will bring in and has brought into our church, that we should have such a fierce love and devotion to one another that that's extended to anybody God brings into our lives. And so we train here, we train in this space. Because God will bring people here who don't know him, who don't know us, who have never been to church, who have moved away from family and are struggling, who are down and out and need a safe place, and we need to be ready to say, come into our family. Now, some of you may consider yourselves new, and if you consider yourself new today, it's your lucky day. You just sit tight, and you will be inundated by people, guaranteed. And some of you are thinking, if we all take this seriously, we're actually all going to be running around the room after each other. But I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be all right. But I want to pray, and I really want to encourage us into this. If you're going to sit down for morning tea, invite someone who you've not chatted to before to sit down next to you. If you see someone that's standing by themselves, go up and say g'day. If you're thinking, oh, how do I break out of this? You simply take a couple of steps. And we've created a culture and a space this morning where it's going to be okay to actually have those conversations and get to know each other. So let's pray. Lord, for some of us, this is quite comfortable territory. It's easy. But for others, it's far more challenging and difficult. But Lord, it is what you're calling us to care for and know each other at such a depth that it's even surpasses that of mother and son. And so Lord, continue to shape our culture in this way today. Provide people with the words to say in those conversations, with the right questions. Create time for us to have these opportunities. And Lord, may your spirit stir so powerfully, not only as we worship you with our song and our prayer, but as we worship you with the movement of our bodies, with our engagement with others, with the friendships that we make. And Lord, may you use this church to do wonderful, incredible things for the people that are part of it and those who are touched by it. It is our prayer this morning that we offer to you in your powerful name. Amen.